For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Goldbridge Saves Football Podcast. The Premier League is back. No more FA Cup for a bit. But I tell you what, Man United losing to Spurs. The crisis continues. I'm fuming about Newcastle, actually. I want to get into the teeth of that. Are Tottenham a bigger club than Manchester City? Gary Neville's sort of saying that they are. We'll talk about that. Relegation battle. Are Liverpool starting to flounder? Bit lucky against Wolves. Arsenal with a good win at Leicester. Champions League this week. Then on Friday, it's the Champions League draw as well. Things starting to hot up all over the place, apart from the UK, where it is cold, but Will has fixed his boiler. So it is heating up there too.
Yeah, I feel like fixing your boiler's turning into some sort of euphemism, but it's not. The boiler is working, business is picking up, and we're two businessmen here to talk business.
Yeah, and I know where you want to start. You want to start off with Ipswich against Aston Villa.
Yeah, well, I would actually. That's a great point for Ipswich Town. But no, I mean, the Sky coverage at the moment just sort of worries me a little bit. But the main worry for you is Gary Neville. But I think we're going to get into Gary Neville and why he worries you and Manchester United, which I actually don't think is a major point. But some big claims coming out this weekend, none more so than Tottenham Hotspur being a bigger club than Manchester City. Gary Neville, 2025. Your thoughts?
In a way, I don't want to be a hypocrite because the focusing in on Gary Neville actually makes me a hypocrite because it's distraction from the real core. Like, we've had stories this morning about transfers and tactics and formations and managers, and actually Man United are failing because they're being run badly and Ineos and the Glazers are making bad choices. But I think there is a lot. I mean, if I saw an article in the Telegraph this morning about Neville and whether he should be commentating on Man United games now, using terms like it's like an under nines team. I've said it on this podcast with you a few times. I feel like he doesn't dare say he doesn't like Amorim, but it's quite easy to read people when you watch them consistently. And he clearly doesn't like something about Amorim, and he's gone down that path consistently. But there's a bigger picture there. And I just think if you're on national TV with that audience, look, what he says on the overlap's up to him. What Gary Lineker does on his podcast is up to him. But if you had Gary Lineker sat there talking about Leicester, going, the tactics are rubbish, the tactics are rubbish, oh, the manager, the players, but ultimately you knew Leicester's owners were causing all of it, but Gary Lineker never mentioned it because for whatever reason, it's not actually what should happen on mainstream TV. You should be covering all angles. And I think that Neville, obviously, there is this regeneration project he's part of, which Ineos are involved in. And I think he actually does need to come out and start clarifying things because the silence speaks volumes, doesn't it, really? Maybe he doesn't like Ineos. Maybe he will say it next week. But I do think that yesterday was just a little bit odd because you look at the weekend of Arsenal did well against Leicester, but Chelsea lost to Brighton. Man United, with all those injuries, all three clubs didn't do stuff in January, which we were talking about 2 weeks ago. I think Man United's problem yesterday was that you look at that bench with kids that have never played at all. There's nothing wrong with having kids on your bench, but they've never played at all. And there was literally not really any subs he could make. Whereas you look at Spurs, they're bringing on Brennan Johnson. They've got people like Bissouma and Sarr there. And that really reflects on a new manager that's come in and not been backed in the market. And then Anthony and Rashford are scoring goals. That's fine if they're not part of the project, but you've got to replace them.
Yeah. Well, look, I think there's so many different issues there to break down. The first one is, I feel, and it happens at every... No, actually, it doesn't happen at every club. It happens at Manchester United in particular. The main cause, which like you've been banging on about this week, is like the focus on the Glazers, isn't it? But then you have a weekend like you've just had where you have the defeat to Spurs, and then it's like, right, the main focus now becomes Gary Neville because of what he's saying. But like, the cause needs to be constant. And every time that there's a defeat at Manchester United, it just seems to be like get changed around to somebody else needs to be blamed. Somebody else focus on this. And this week it'll be Gary Neville because of the link with Ineos and, you know, him not saying the right things on. So there'll be a week or another 2 weeks just wasted where as a fan base, like it really needs to be United, ironically, going forward. That the problem is the Glazers. And probably, I mean, I'm not well-versed in Ineos, but, you know, they've not been pulling up trees since they've come in. But the problem definitely is the Glazers. Mm. So as a fan base, the Gary Neville stuff, in the grand scheme of things, is so quite insignificant. But that'll get all the attention and all the headlines, you know, and even like what you've been putting out this morning and other bits and bobs. So it's like, as a fan base, you know, like when we needed new owners, eventually we got there. And I just think you need to get to that point because it's just going to be 2 weeks wasted talking about Gary Neville not giving us enough coverage or this bit. Is he on this or that? But just focus on getting the Glazers out. That is the main point because how many storms have they ridden through? Like, and they'll just be sat there going, oh, they're talking about Neville again. We've got another week off. So it's just, that's the
focus. I completely agree. And it's a well-trodden path. And even like a story this morning about Victor Osimhen in the summer, you're like, in the summer, there's 4 months of this season left. We can't afford him. We've just messed up a transfer window 2 weeks ago and we're talking about tomorrow when we should be talking about today. And I agree with you completely. The only thing I would say about Neville, though, is because of the platform he has on Sky, if he actually was there on that commentary going, we can talk about tactics, we can talk about players, but this has been going on for 20 years under the Glazers and the bottom line is they are sinking this football club. That's sort of why I do it, because I'm like, you know, Gary Neville's very socially aware. He's got a fantastic team around him. He won't want the negative PR. So maybe someone will go, look, Gary, you're going to have to start mentioning the Glazers. And then you do get, he is a powerful voice. But you're right, the distraction of it is, it does help the Glazers ultimately, but you want people to be calling them out. And I think somebody in his position, not because it's Gary Neville, but just because he has that massive audience on Sky, is commentating on the Man United game in front of millions, you know?
Yeah, but and also we know he's very stubborn as well. So it almost needs that United force around it to build the cause bigger. So it gets him to a point where, you know, not by having a go at him, he talks about it. It's because it's become such a big story. You know, I'm not condoning it with all the stuff around the Liverpool game all those years ago. But, you know, clubs in much smaller positions have united and made bigger noises about one specific issue. Like the Glazer thing now almost to me feels a bit like a parody of like, oh, it's the Glazers. And that's, I just think that's down to having so many different fractures, you know, who was it? Is it the 58 group and everything? Yeah. Like, well, that is just like, obviously you're trying to, like, people are trying to work together like that. And, you know, the different fan channels, then you've got the different fan groups. You've got all these different things where everybody just needs to come together and work as one to get the Glazers out, which I actually think can be done. And for Manchester United going forward, you know, you even speak about would a relegation work and stuff like that. Well, under the Glazers, I actually think it would be even more catastrophic, you know, of that general reset point. But I just, yeah, get United, get your shit together.
Yeah, I mean, look, in relation to the game yesterday, I actually thought we did okay.
It was all right, actually, wasn't it?
Yeah, I thought the second half was actually quite entertaining, which anybody who doesn't watch Man United might go, it was total shit, and you'd be right, but normally it's a lot worse than that. So I actually thought we should have got a point out of it. I thought for Ange, it was a big win, but I wouldn't look at that Spurs performance and go, you know, you're any better. You're still in the bottom half and that Europa League final, could it be? I mean, for both clubs, they've almost got the golden egg there. It's like if you could somehow get to the Europa League final and win it and get yourself in the Champions League, I think if I was Fulham and Bournemouth and everyone else who misses out, I'd be going, that's not fair. How has that shit done that? But of course, we both legitimately qualified for the Europa League last year. And that's the rules. That's the rules. The funny thing is for Spurs and Man United is neither of them will have that golden egg option next year because neither of us will be in Europe. I mean, it's impossible for Spurs to be in the Europa League or the Conference League next year because they're not going to get up the league. If they win the Europa League, they're in the Champions League. So that's their only option to get into Europe. I mean, Man United could still win the FA Cup, but it's such a massive opportunity, but I don't know. I mean, look, teams in Europe are quite technical. I don't know that even though the Premier League's strong, I don't think there's any guarantees that Spurs or Man United are going to win that tournament, but somehow they've both got to try and do it.
Well, I had to get a health and safety check sent round your house last night, didn't I? Because you obviously tweeted out that Manchester United, for you, would win the Europa League. Just to double check, firstly, you hadn't been drinking at that point. It was a Sunday.
I hadn't been drinking. I'd had a hard weekend and I hadn't been hacked either. And I was in full possession of my phone as I watched Amanda Land on the BBC. So I don't know whether that's going to take responsibility, but I don't know. Maybe it was because I saw in the second half that there were some signs of positivity. Maybe you just got a dream, haven't you? If you haven't got a dream, how are you going to have a dream come true?
Exactly. And you know, sometimes people, you know, firstly, they'll go for the Forest one. And sometimes people will question, you know, oh, he's just a guy, milk it. That tweet there for me perfectly proves that you're a Manchester United fan, because you're on the worst run of form, but you've seen one semi-good half of football where Xerxes missed a couple of sitters, and you've got belief there. So that for me shows that you are a true Manchester United fan.
But also this time last year, we were bloody dreadful as well. And if I'd have said, I think we're going to win the FA Cup, which point we hadn't knocked Liverpool out and we hadn't beat Man City, people would have gone, you are up. So look, we haven't got Liverpool or Man City in the Europa League. There's no Real Madrid. There's no Barcelona. So look, it's all we've got. We've got a hope. And look, it's difficult. But I thought there was elements of that game yesterday. I mean, I did not understand. I had to Google it. When Maddison scored, and obviously I wasn't very happy, and then he starts going, shh, I felt like, I think I did call him a knobhead, but I was like, who are you shushing, mate? You're scoring a bloody tap-in. And then I read who he was shushing and I thought, no, seriously not. So apparently it's because Roy Keane basically said, Maddison doesn't turn up very often. If Spurs fans think Maddison returning is going to get them top six, they're mad. And then Maddison scores a tap-in and he's going, shush. And I'm sort of like, mate, I understand getting lost in the moment, but this morning I'd be quite embarrassed by that, because scoring a tap-in against the worst Man United side in Premier League history doesn't prove Roy Keane wrong. He's basically saying you're a good player that's not consistent, who obviously doesn't someone like Roy enough. Keane would find infuriating, and you're not going to inspire this Spurs team to top six. So who's he shushing, really?
Well, and that's the thing. I think I was sort of thinking about it a fair bit, probably too much, which was quite sad, actually. But I thought, right, fair enough, he's done that. And like you said, you can get lost in the emotions and he's done that. But then like this morning or last night, like whatever team he's got around him have put like a TikTok together and put the Roy Keane clip together. And I was just thinking, like, if you're Roy Keane, that this is fundamentally tying what you're into. This is a guy who missed out, rightly or wrongly, in a 26-man England team squad to go to the World Cup. Like, there are absolutely moments of brilliance, and yesterday he had a really good game, albeit against the poor Manchester United side. But I want to see James Maddison performing week in, week out like this. And you know, injuries are part of the game, but as an elite player, like, is there so much that you can do now to sort of tie that in together to be more consistent? And like, if Roy Keane's at home, it would just be like, you knobhead, like, just why are you doing, like, why are you creating these clips? Just focus on yourself and become the best player that you can be and get rid of all the noise around you. It ties into what we spoke about recently, didn't it? The Gordon interview, which is coming very soon.
Yeah.
You know, we spoke about him, Bellingham, Trent. Like, you wouldn't get that out of them.
Well,
and albeit this Bellingham red card this weekend, but let's not talk about that.
Producer Noel, get ready, because I feel like we might have our own compilation clip coming up here. You're telling me James Maddison's team has actually used that with a clip of Roy Keane to put on his socials?
Yeah, yeah. I thought, well, hang on, let me just double check. Do the rant and then if it's bad, we'll just...
Oh, my Christ. Like, I think he's a complete prat for doing what he did anyway. But look, we've all scored goals down the park and overreacted. He's done it in front of his own fans. So I understand, you know, you score a 2-yard tap-in, you run to the cameras and you say, shush. And then afterwards you think, actually, I've just scored a tap-in against the shit United side. Roy Keane was actually saying, I'm inconsistent and we're not going to get top six. But to double down on it with a TikTok bloody edit, mate, he's basically saying you're not consistently as good as you should be. And you've actually just, in 4K, clipped it up and proved it. Oh, I've scored a tap-in against the shit United side. Have that, Roy Keane. Have that. Have it. I mean, that's typical Spurs mentality. It's like me saying, Spurs will never win the Premier League. Then they go and win the Audi Cup and then they clip it up. And go, have that, Goldbridge. Have that. There's the Audi Cup. Oh, have it. We've won it. I mean, oh, that's so embarrassing. Mate, look, Maddison, I said on this podcast he would be flop of the season. I'm not going to change it because he scored a tap-in against Man United. James Maddison has the ability to be competing with the likes of Foden and Odegaard, etc. That's what Roy Keane's saying. He's competing with Ipswich's number 10. And who is that at the end of the day? They haven't got one.
They don't play like that. You know that. No, I think perfectly summed up. They'll use this clip next week if he scores another tap-in of you going, shut your mouth. And then if they do win the Audi Cup, they'll probably use that clip as an Audi Cup. I just think concentrate on your game.
They'll have Southampton at home next week. They'll be losing 4-0. Maddison will score a last-minute penalty to make it 4-1, and then he'll run down, take his T-shirt off. Up yours, Goldbridge.
I just think, like, we tie it into the Bellingham stuff, and it goes back to the team around you, doesn't it? Like, he's probably come away from that, and they've gone, oh, well done, James. Like, you've done it. You've proved the doubt was wrong. And he's, like, being gassed up by everyone like that. And it's just like, watching him at Leicester, even his time at Coventry as well, you just think there's such a really good talent there where it ties into, you know, like, almost like the Jack Grealishes of, like, what can be for this player. But he's late 20s now, going on 30. And you just think, right, this is probably one of your last chances to become one of the best midfielders in the country. And, you know, you're putting energy towards a TikTok edit.
Well, I just think it's Spurs' big problem, isn't it? We've always said this, like, you know.
But I think it's like an English player mentality as well to some of it. And that's why, you know, I'm always delighted that Jude Bellingham has left and played out in Spain a little bit, because for some reason, some players just, like, stay in this sort of, I don't know, the Rashford thing we've spoken about so much, and Grealish and everything like that. Make the best of yourself.
But it raises the point, doesn't it? Because I was watching Arsenal at the weekend against Leicester. Good win for Arsenal, actually. We'll start talking about the title in a minute. But Sterling is, I think he's just 30 or just 29 or something like that. But he's been crap for about 2 years. So late 20s, should be in his prime, fell off completely. Jack Grealish, again, fell off. Was a really talented player. Marcus Rashford trying to reinvent himself. Jadon Sancho's obviously been mentioned. We were talking about James Maddison there. All English players with immense talent that have fallen off for probably different reasons, but there might actually be a justifiable reason behind it. I mean, look, Maddison scores that goal yesterday, pick the ball up, run back to the halfway line, just keep it on the low down, because actually, yeah, I think they scored in the first 25 minutes. Man United could have come back and won the game. You look even a bigger idiot there, but they can't. The ego in them can't stop. This is the low IQ of these players. It's like, I'm going to grab the ball from a tap in and go shush, even though the game is really early and I could lose this game and end up with egg on my face. But no, I can't take the opportunity. I've got to take the opportunity. And you think, you look at the Salahs of this world, the Van Dijks, the Bruyners, the Roy Keanes, and you know, they're winners. And they know a game's 90 minutes and they know that one performance isn't enough. But you get these... And I think, like, when you're trying to understand what's happened to Grealish and what's happened to Sterling and what's happened to Rashford and what's happening to Maddison, there's a bloody good conversation there, because they're all English. They've all had big moves. They've all earned good money. And for some reason, they not only struggle with consistency, but they almost fall away from the talent that they were. And yet you look at other players who don't, and there's got to be something in the water in England. There's got to be something in the mentality.
The
people they surround themselves with, or does the fire go out because they get money? I don't know. But it's a very English problem. And you're right about Bellingham. He's avoided that by going to Dortmund, by going to Madrid and putting himself into environments where you've got to prove yourself every single day.
Yeah, but then there are English players that, you know, Declan Rice, we don't really have these conversations
Anthony
around
Gordon,
him.
Like you said.
Anthony Gordon, Harry Kane, I know he's in Germany now, but at Spurs we never really had those ones. And I just think it comes back to, like, focus on the Roy Keane criticism. One, I think the most elite players won't even go searching for it and would be like you, like, what's it all about, after Google it if it did come to that point. Two, if you do see it, I think as James Maddison, Roy Keane was right, and you'd go, he is right, and I need to, you know, learn from that elite player on how to work on my game. And then the third option, which he's chosen, is the worst option. Oh, here's my tap in, here's my goal. You have that. Two fingers up to you. and you know that solved that problem going forward. It's just like consistency is the greatest trait that these players can have, and consistency at a high level, and they've not got that, and that needs to be the focus, not these small little stories and TikToks.
We've almost fallen into that. I remember saying this last year when we were talking about podcasts, YouTube channels in the football space. Respect to everybody who does it because it's really difficult, you know, but there are some that almost remind me of Nuts Magazine from like 20 years ago, where it's like, you know, instead of it being my top 10, you know, actresses tits who wear a bikini or men who wear Speedos, it's now my top 10 left backs in the bottom half of the table. And it's just sort of like soundbite. And James Maddison, like you said, you made a good point there, Will. It's like, actually, if you're an elite winner who wants to do well and get in the England team and win things with Spurs, probably should listen to Roy Keane and what he's saying and go, actually, you know what? If I look at myself in the mirror, I am not consistent. I do need to do this more often. But his first reaction after a tapping is to shush the camera. And you sort of like go, Roy Keane's just won there, mate. He's caught you in 4K. You think you've won because you're going to get a bit of social media interaction, but he's actually just exposed the problem. We move on,
yeah. And look, you know, Spurs got a good win after a tough time. They've got players coming back from injury, and ironically, they're playing a side who've, you know, Manchester United have just had a week of like they've been to one of the great battles where they've lost a load of players, had to name a full youth bench, barring Victor Lindelof. And you know, there's positives there for Spurs to take on and go forward. And then I just feel Madison's defeat from the one coffee.
He's ruining it. We'll beat Everton next week. Next week we'll be talking about that. Before we move on to the title race, great show this. Make sure you give us a follow and get your comments in as usual on the podcast. Love your support. Hopefully you're enjoying it. But just I've got to talk about this. Talking about Gary Neville and Spurs. He did say that Spurs effectively are a bigger club than Manchester City. He said, whilst Man City have done well over the last 10 to 12 years, Spurs are a bigger club than Manchester City. Let's be real. Let's not be controversial. Man City were taken over by Abu Dhabi 15 years ago. Tottenham are a far bigger football club. And Tottenham is historically a football club that's bigger than Man City. And whilst Man City have done well recently and everything like that, Tottenham historically are a bigger club. Let's be clear. Agree or disagree?
You know, I put this in the chat. I've put this in the running order. And then we've just had that chat there where we've said about, you know, Nuts Magazine 10 years ago about bottom half 10 left backs.
Mm.
And I do feel that this falls into that category. Like,
we're trying out some new content.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe get editing. No, I just feel Spurs, Man City, who's the bigger club?
Yeah.
I don't really give two shits. Like, Spurs, you know, better fan base. But it's like, you know, the constant debate we're having at the moment with Blues and being at the level we are, and they're a big club and they deserve to be there. You deserve what you're given. And Manchester United, no more so than anything. Like, big club, you know, that probably gets put in a pitch deck and you might be able to sell it down the line to a couple of sponsors. But just the battle of who the biggest club is, you know, is going to be never, ever, ever won. And you can have that many tweets on Twitter and that many arguments with your mates.
Well, it will be won between Man United and Bournemouth.
Well, I don't know after this season. If they get Champions League football, there'd be another debate to be had.
But I
like,
do get
what
your
does
point,
it mean?
But
like, do you get like, oh, I'm a big club, brilliant. What have you won in the last 50 years? Fuck all.
Yeah, I get what you mean, but I'm actually going to go to Newcastle with this. So it was a sort of, you ruined a sort of foreplay.
Oh, no, you carry on. Well, I think they tie into it as well.
Yeah, well, I do want to talk about Newcastle. But look, Spurs, historically a bigger club than Man City. Like you say, what does it even mean? Man United are a bigger club than Arsenal today, but Arsenal have had three title runs in a row and Man United are in the bottom half. But Man United are a bigger club. Even Arsenal fans know that. Who's the better club at the moment? Arsenal, but Man United are bigger. Like, they've got the history, they've got the fan base, they've got the revenue, everything. But what does it mean, like, in the modern day? But to say Tottenham are historically bigger than Man City, well, Nottingham Forest won back-to-back European Cups in when was it, the 80s? Arsenal are bigger than them. So I think as a Spurs fan, I'd sort of be like, Gary, that doesn't help us at all. We can't win anything, and Man City are winning everything at the moment. And if we're talking about history, I mean, 2008 was what, nearly 20 years ago. So Man City are building a pretty good recent history. And I'm with you. What does it even fucking mean when you're arguing about Man City or Spurs, who's a bigger club? I don't think Spurs fans will go to bed at night in their Spurs pajamas going, yeah, we're a bigger club than Man City. Historically, Gary's right. Isn't it?
It's all with the kids. Like, you know, there's only so many parents that can put their club perspective on to their children. You know, I've seen it at Blues a few times. Like, we've been doing work. There's been like parents in there with like kids who've got like Manchester City tops on. If you've got a club that have had that, you know, like Man United had that level of dominance from when I was growing up until like late teens, people are going to support Manchester United. It's a fickle world. And Man City have had that level of dominance where they've had a 10-year period where if you were born in that era, you are going to support them. So like that's how you get the next sort of fan base in a horrible way. So Spurs have got, you know, who out of Aston Villa and Birmingham City, Mark, who won the last major trophy?
Birmingham City.
Thank you, 2011. So does that mean we're a bigger club than Villa? I don't know. I mean, Villa fans would probably say that's definitely not the answer. So the big club debate is one that gets happened all the time. Big clubs are all around, you know, and I fall into this. We literally did a video on my channel about what should be the 20 Premier League clubs. What's that all about? We're having a season this year with Bournemouth doing well. Fulham are up in eighth. They're doing amazing. Obviously, Forest we're speaking about lots. If it was just big club FC, we might as well start the NFL and start the Super League now. So shove big clubs up your arse.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, just before we move on, like the Spurs, I got sent a couple of clips last night from people, like I think Spurs content creators, etc. And they're sort of like, sit down, United fans, everything like that. And I'm like, yeah, I tell you what, things are bad at our club, but if you're celebrating and telling people to sit down based on what your club's been, yeah.
But
let's move on.
But like, if you were watching the game, you'd do that, and I'd do that. And I think that ties into like celebration, but it's just like there's no definitive answer about who the biggest and best club is. So enjoy your moment and everyone crack on with their lives.
I'll circle back to Newcastle because I feel like Arsenal and Liverpool have been neglected and they are top of the league's title race at the moment. Very standard win for Liverpool yesterday. Bit shaky moments, but what?
I only caught the highlights of it, and they were extensive on Match of the Day too. But they highlighted in the commentary, it was the first time it was the first time ever that they'd not had a shot in the second half.
Yeah.
I thought Wolves played really well. Like
Stonewall
really
penalty though, and it would have been comfortable then. VAR, terrible.
Yeah, but then you could also. But should Konate have been sent off?
It was a dive. It shouldn't have been a pen.
Oh, sorry. You mean, well, they did have a pen though.
Did they?
Yeah. The second goal was a pen.
Oh, yeah, I did watch the game, yeah.
Yeah, fucking hell, wakey, wakey. No, Konate could have had a red card. Wolves put him man for man, but basically, the point we're trying to get to ties off the point of they rotated, they lost to Plymouth. Like we said, they should have won that. They've drew in the last minute in a energy-sapping game against Everton, and they've played Wolves, who are 17th, 16th?
Fighting for their lives.
Fighting for their lives, and they've been pushed by them. It just feels a bit like with that Arsenal bad run of form where you can, and Man City had it as well. You know, when they beat Southampton 1-0, we were like, oh, shaky. Then they have a bad run. Is it just, very precautiously, the start of, you know, there's a few signs here where we should be worried?
Yeah. And I think it's a big week for Liverpool going to Villa on Wednesday and then Man City on Sunday. You'd look at that if you were Liverpool and Arsenal fans specifically and hope that that can open it up. I still think we're clinging on to a title race, and I think that was the importance of the Tarkowski goal last Wednesday. But on the other hand, Liverpool winning 2-1 against Wolves, but ultimately winning, yeah, we can scrutinise it and go, oh, you know, but I've played the game. I've seen so many title races for Manchester United. And these are the sort of games that actually win you the league when you're not playing that well and everyone expects you to win and you don't win 4-0, but you win 2-1, but you still win. And it will be quite sapping for Arsenal because they'd have been watching that, having scrapped against Leicester, and they'll see that last minute sort of chance for Wolves or last few minutes and they didn't take it. And yeah, I think it's a good win for Liverpool. I still think they're going to win the league. And I think I watched the Arsenal game as well. And I was worried with 10 minutes to go that the problem was going to be the problem, that they haven't got enough attacking talent. I mean, Sterling was stinking out the place. But they got the job done in the end with Marino, their new striker, former midfielder. But I think Arsenal just going to hang in there. And I think this week, really will. Arsenal got West Ham, Man City and Villa for Liverpool away. I think if Liverpool come out of that with 4 points, it's hard for Arsenal. They need like two draws or a win and a, or two losses or two, a draw and a loss. But if Liverpool can win one of those games, it makes it difficult for Arsenal, I think.
Mark, if it's all right for you, I'd like to hear from our halftime sponsors.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save.
$20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
I just felt this week really highlighted the point. You know, we've said Arsenal fans maybe need to relax in terms of like, oh, it should have been us this season. But to go into like the last 20 minutes of having Marino up front, who came out in the post-match interview when asked and said, like, I don't think I've ever played a striker. I might have done it as an 8-year-old. And I'm like, how do Arsenal get into that position? Right, Kai Havertz is your number nine. Jesus just hasn't worked. Like, we know that he's had two or three seasons there. So, like, how are we at a point now where you're playing Trossard through the middle where he stunk the joint out and then Marino comes in and scores two and you know, puts a stamp over that crack for a bit. But it's just like, I think that's where the frustration would be for me as Arsenal. I don't know what's going on with the Edu situation, if that's what's next to come after that for Arsenal and how they're going. But like, you know, it's thrown forward, isn't it? They need to be 18 months ahead, 24 months ahead. And if there's still problems up above there, like that's what, like, they should be capitalising now, not necessarily overthrowing Liverpool, but like to go into that game and Marino to thankfully grab you out of jail against a poor Leicester City side. I don't know. I'd just be a little bit worried for Arsenal going forward in terms of like, yeah, that point really worried me.
Well, I predicted that would be a draw, and you're right.
But you're going to say I predicted Marino would score two in the last 10 minutes.
Yeah, I'd probably get good odds on that. No, I predicted it would be a draw, and I think for 80 minutes I was being quite smug on the watch along. But then obviously they were two good goals by Arsenal. But it was. Arsenal are defensively going to have to do that for the rest of the season, and they are good at it. Like, they've got the best defence in the league. They're going to have to keep clean sheets and score moment goals, and it worked against Leicester. But I just don't think they almost need to win every week. And look, if they stay in the title race long enough, they go to Anfield three games out in May. They won't. I don't think that's a given that they'd go there and get a result. So they just got to hang in there. But I think if it's another. Imagine if Arsenal lose the title by 2 points or 5 points, even 7 points. I'd still look back at January and go, that's shocking. And Arteta said it as well. He was disappointed. And every Arsenal fan's disappointed. But it's so bad. I mean, look, Man United's run like it. Other clubs have run like it. But to be run like a spreadsheet when you're in a title race. Arsenal, we've said it, and I think we all know it's true. You put Ollie Watkins up front for Arsenal and they win the league. And I think Liverpool are floundering a little bit, and you look at it and you go, Arsenal would, you know, if they had some momentum, I think Liverpool would be worried. If Arsenal were winning games 3 or 4-0 and Liverpool were playing like this, I think they'd panic a little bit. But I think Liverpool would look at it and go, we might be not doing that great, but these lads behind us aren't going to catch us anyway. I don't think the pressure's intense enough.
Yeah. And like, you look at the window Manchester City have just had, where, like, you know, they bring in Marmoush, and obviously he scored a hat trick, so he's at the thing. But like, even the performance of like Nico Gonzalez, where, you know, Pep called him the mini Rodri after the game.
Yeah.
And it's just like, but it's just like, you know, how many times it just feels there's so many clear points for those teams. You know, Chelsea changed the goalie from Roberto Sanchez to Jorgensen at the weekend. We've said for ages they need a keeper. They haven't got a number nine that they can fully trust. Arsenal, we've just been banging the drum for so long that they need this number nine. Arteta's disappointed. And like, just like, you have got the opportunity, and you don't know if you'll get this again. You probably will, but you don't know if you will get this opportunity to fight for the league so closely with the Liverpool side that aren't Man City. So I think that, again, that's where my frustrations would be as an Arsenal fan.
100%. And I did see Pep Guardiola calling this Gonzalez the new mini Rodri. And I thought, you know what? I've said it. You've said it. We've discussed it. Some people, even Man City fans, won't listen to it. Man City's fall off for me is as simple as they're a one-man team. And I think we saw it at the weekend. And the manager even came out and said it himself that's been the big problem. And I think I understand why people don't want to say it, because it's like Man City have been so dominant. They're a juggernaut. They've got all this money. They've got this great manager. You can't just fall apart without Rodri. But the facts were there before their injury. Like, it was a smaller evidence sample. But when they lost to Villa last season, Rodri didn't play. Their win ratio without Rodri was bad before the injury. Since he's gone, it's been terrible. And it's embarrassing on the part of Pep. It's embarrassing on the part of Haaland and De Bruyne and Foden and all these other players. But without that piece, more than probably any team in Premier League history, they aren't the same. I mean, Man United still were in a very good title race when Roy Keane did his cruciate ligament. I think Liverpool without Salah would still be in a title race. It'd be harder. But Man City's fall off without Rodri has been terrible. And this lad that's come in looks like he's somebody who actually can give them some of that stability back, and they needed to do it. And fair play, like you say, Arsenal needed a striker. They didn't get one. Man City, who won't win the league, have gone and got a Rodri replacement who they might not even need next year because Rodri will be back. But if he did get injured, they've got the replacement. And that's forward planning. That's clever. But I thought Newcastle will. Oh, I don't even understand what Newcastle are. That's the thing. This game was like they were both locked in fifth. Newcastle played really well to get to the Carabao Cup final, played well against Blues with their reserves. It was, you know, they look intense. They look like they're really working hard. And then you watch that game against Man City and they were bloody awful. Man City are vulnerable and rotating. Bernardo Silva's on the bench. There was a couple of others because they got that Real Madrid game. You think this is perfect for Newcastle, away from home, high intensity, get out a Man City side that's just lost to Real Madrid, got their other eye on that. And they were absolutely terrible. I mean, Trippier deserved to get subbed at halftime. But I look at Newcastle, what is the Newcastle project for you? Because I'm confused by it, and I'm not even a bloody Newcastle fan, but I looked at it the weekend and went, are you an underdog or are you trying to be a team that wins the league? Because at the moment, I think they have an identity crisis.
Yeah, but I think that perfectly ties into what you just said, doesn't it? Are you a team that are trying to win the league or are you that? Well, yeah, Tonali, Bruno Guimaraes, Isak, Anthony Gordon are all those. But then littered in and around them are players that Eddie Howe has been getting the final, you know, getting the pips out of the juice for them. Like this, he's squeezing them so much that, like, I think you are bound to get these performances when you have a back line of the Bravka, you know, who over exceeds in games, but then, you know, there is a level of his quality that, you know, is there all the time. And you've got that back four of Trippier, Shard, Dan Burn and Lewis Hall, who when it's at its almost best can beat a PSG. But that level is so hard to maintain. And we've not really spoke about the sort of court case that come out this week. And does that change things for Newcastle going forward with all the sponsorship rules? And can they just put Visit Saudi on everything and just go back to this court case of Manchester City? But I think Eddie Howe has got parts of that team where you could challenge for the league, but then as an 11 and a squad where you rotate, they're players that he's overperformed with, but I just think you're bound to have these performances because they can't sustain that level.
Yeah, I do worry about Newcastle because they've got these really rich owners, and I think many people as well thought that give it 3 or 4 years, they're going to be the next Man City. They'll comfortably be in the Champions League every year and they'll be fighting for the title. I think that was the plan, but obviously PSR and FFP has limited that for the moment. But I think the big problem at the moment is that they probably won't get top five again, which is Champions League football. I think if you win the Carabao Cup, you're in the Conference League. So they'll have some level of European football, but Bruno Guimaraes, Anthony Gordon, Isak, they are Champions League players, and it's how you keep hold of those players. And then if you don't keep hold of those players and add to those players, how do you move into the Champions League spot? So then they become further away from that, which wasn't the project in the first place. So I'm sort of confused by Newcastle. And I think that's why the result this weekend was quite hard to take, because you sort of look at it and go, well, you played like underdogs again. You went to Man City, who are weak at the moment, and basically played like you were playing prime Man City and took your medicine, when actually, I think you should be a team that should be going there and winning and performing, and they didn't. And I think I don't really understand what Newcastle are, and it's interesting because I saw a lot of Newcastle fans on social media sort of echoing it, that frustration of what is the project at the moment. And that must be quite difficult for, because Newcastle fans are just enjoying the ride. They're a great set of fans, but you do want to, like, if you as a Birmingham City fan, you know the destination that you're trying to go to. And I think Newcastle fans thought they did know the destination, but they're sort of moving further and further away from it at the moment. And it's sort of like, have they changed the destination now? Are they actually just saying, we're Newcastle, we're really happy to be sort of in sixth place? But yeah, it's a bit of an identity crisis.
But they got there early, didn't they, with the Champions League football. Mm. And I think you almost need to build yourself into European football just because of the calendar. And so if they got into a Conference League, which might not be the end destination, but a stop on the way, I actually don't think that's too much of a negative. I think it ties into what you're saying. You know, Bruno Guimarães is, what, late 20s? I think Tagliani is in around that. This is based off my Football Manager save, which I'm in the fourth season in. Get in the comments if you want to find out more. But they're sort of aging, so then it's their personal aspirations up against the club's aspirations, isn't it? Where from a club perspective, I think if you can get European football next year, we've seen with Newcastle, they had that drop-off when they were in Champions League. Villa are having it a little bit this season, where if you get Champions League football, not out of the blue, but unexpectedly, it just has a knock-on to, you know, playing Thursday, Sunday, which is so, so demanding, especially with the way people play these days.
Yeah, I mean, another club that's having a similar sort of thing, although I've got to say, and I'm not saying this about all Chelsea fans, but I do find some of your social media fans nauseating, spoiled. I mean, it's almost like it fits Chelsea's stereotype quite well, just pontificating snobby fans who think they should be better than they are. I saw some reaction to Chelsea's loss to Brighton even before the one. And I haven't seen much of it over the weekend, actually, I must be honest. But I look at where Chelsea were even after the Brighton loss, and I still think they were fourth. I think they're down to sixth now. But Chelsea were basically Man United last year. Like, they were flirting around the bottom half of the table. Poch started to get some momentum and they sacked him, which I think was a mistake. But Chelsea spent a lot of money, weren't doing very well. And then this season, whilst I didn't really get the Maresca appointment, I thought he did quite well in steadying the ship for season one. And they're in with a shout of getting the Champions League. And at the start of the season, if Chelsea were in a shout with Champions League in February, I think every Chelsea fan would have bitten their hand off for it. So again, they're another club, Nicholas Jackson. I mean, it's amazing. Man United have had season-ending injuries in the last 2 weeks. So have Arsenal, so have Chelsea. It's almost like you have to be buying in January now because so many people get injuries in February. But yeah, Chelsea, they're struggling at the moment and they've been struggling since Christmas. But I still think that the situation they're in isn't one necessarily to moan about. It's almost like that legacy history thing again, isn't it? We're Chelsea, we shouldn't be doing this. But they're going through a difficult patch, but everybody does. And I think most people would have put Chelsea sort of sixth this season anyway. They've still got a very good chance. And you were looking at their fixtures and they're not that bad coming up.
Yeah, they've got a better run coming up. I just think it's part of this, like, we sometimes speak about it, don't we, of like, if we were to look back over the season just with our podcast titles, it's like Man United are back, Man United in crisis, Man United could be relegated, Liverpool. It's, football is all about moments. And I just think we've grown up in this generation where in my life, it's basically been effectively, if you zoom out, Man United dominance and then Manchester City dominance. And if you're flirting around that, and a bit of Chelsea in there as well, sorry, Chelsea fans, but if you're in that, as a fan, that's what you look up to, isn't it? And if you're in that top bracket, you think we should have that. And if you don't, as soon as it goes bad, I think you start to reflect on that a little bit and go, why not us? And why can't we get up there? Whereas, like you said, Chelsea, I mean, we had them down in sixth, seventh, eighth, I think some people did in their Premier League predictions at the start of the season. And they've got a really good chance to get top four, top five, maybe win a European trophy, which people can scoff at, but a trophy's a trophy and a day out to day out. So it's just Maresca, you know, Maresca was the best thing since sliced bread. Again, now he's been called a championship manager based on the Leicester performance. It's just like, I think zoom out is really key to do. But then I don't know. We get, you were it. You know, Rory's it with this. We've got a lot of people in prominent positions now who are fans. So again, I almost don't blame them because, you know, I've been there as a fan at a game and you do act emotionally. So it's that we want the emotional response. We don't want it. I'm going down a wormhole with this, but Chelsea, you're fine. Calm down. I think you'll be all right.
I think Chelsea are sort of going through what United fans went through, I think probably around the sort of Van Gaal era, where you've had recent success and it's still in touching distance and you don't want to accept the reality of your position is that a seismic thing happened when Abramovich left and the club had to sort of rebuild under new owners. And I think that sometimes I've been in that position. Your most vocal fans aren't necessarily the most intelligent. And they're not the most accepting of the situation. And I actually think, you'd be disappointed with that Brighton result. But Brighton, I think it's the strength of the Premier League has been shown again this weekend. And Chelsea's platform from this position in the last 3 months of the season isn't a bad one to be in. I'd certainly love it as a Man United fan and I expected it, but we're miles off. But look at the weekend, Brighton, one of the most frustrating teams in the Premier League. They have had injuries, but they've got a very good squad. They're not in Europe. I actually think they should be higher than they are. And maybe they can get into the top five race again, but they've had a good, they're a good team. That Matoma goal was immaculate, by the way. Minte played really well. Belieber again. And then you look at Forest Fulham. I did say, Will, watch Forest's results for the next three. They've got to go Newcastle away, and then they've got Arsenal at home. But Fulham, being that quintessential Premier League side, I put them down for a win and they did. That shows the strength of the Premier League again. Everton going to Palace and winning. I think sometimes we want a really competitive Premier League and then we behave spoilt behaviour when our teams aren't where we want them to be. I think it's brilliant what Brighton did to Chelsea. I think it's great what Fulham do. I like the shock element. But Wolves at Liverpool, Leicester for 80 minutes against Arsenal. It's like every game apart from Man City, Newcastle this weekend had something on it.
But that's Villa Ipswich,
what a game.
I think now, in the past, and this is probably a bigger point, we just have like people in the media that were like more objective. Maybe you'd have like fan led journalists that were looking after their clubs and they'd get a point. But it was like this more wider objective things. Whereas now, we hear the voices of like, you know, your emotion after a Manchester United defeat, Rory's emotion after a Chelsea defeat. There's other fans at the clubs and we hear those voices. So it's sort of like, excuse that. But like, objectively, this has been one of the best Premier League seasons we've had in absolutely ages. Everybody beating everyone. Manchester City aren't winning the Premier League. Liverpool sort of not coming out of nowhere, but not many people expected them to win the Premier League with the new manager. And we've got a title race, a relegation race, European football all the way down to 9th, 10th. I just think for me, as a Birmingham City fan in League One, just enjoy it.
Exactly. Just talking about the relegation race, it is 4 from 3, 3 from 4. The gap is too big, even for Man United to get relegated. It's too big. And Wolves, difficult game against Liverpool. You'd expect them to lose. They made a game of it. Ipswich, though, that point is a really good point for them in the end. I mean, it's a funny one. I did sort of see the last half an hour of it and go down to 10 men, Ipswich then score with 10 men, and then it's all out attack from Villa, but they can't quite get over the line. Villa have got Liverpool and Chelsea next two games. For Villa, there's two stories there. Relegation first, Southampton are gone, Leicester... And well, actually, I don't think Leicester are gone. I think Leicester, Ipswich and Wolves, but I still think Wolves' quality will be too much. But it is close between those three.
Well, I think if you're an Ipswich fan, you'd be absolutely pulling your dick off and not in a pleasurable way. Like you draw with 10 men away at Aston Villa and it comes the week or 2 weeks after losing to Southampton.
If they go down by 2 points, they're going to kick themselves.
So if they'd have beat Southampton, which they Wolves would be in the relegation zone right now. And like we speak, you know, I've been down there too many times to mention, but like it is a psychological battle where if you can get yourself out of it and start fighting, but that at least with this Ipswich side, they are fighting. I feel less so with Leicester. Like I know they're on exactly the same points, but I did say at the start of the season, I feel Ipswich Town would grow into this season. And yeah, I know I'm just speaking after the back of the Southampton defeat, but even when they've had those defeats, which for many teams could be a bit like, well, that's it, done. You know, they come back and they fight back. So one, Kieran McKenna is a standout manager going forward. I think if it's not Ipswich we're looking at going forward, it's bigger teams. But at least they are still fighting and they are still within touching distance. Go on.
I was just about to say, just looking at the future Premier League fixtures, it's actually a really exciting 10 days because we've got the Premier League this weekend, then we've got midweek Premier League the week after. So it's really exciting how it's going to pan out. Leicester play Brentford on Friday at home. I mean, Brentford have just suddenly started being good away from home, which is a bit of a problem. And then Ipswich play Spurs on Saturday, which, you know, Maddison might be looking a twat in that game. But yeah, I mean, look, Ipswich have... Wolves go to Bournemouth, where you think Wolves are going to lose that. Wolves, I must say, with Wolves, they always seem to have a difficult game. Like every fixture, I always go, they're always playing someone really hard. And I know the Premier League is tough, but they never seem to be playing Ipswich or Leicester or Southampton. And I think that's going to be the problem, isn't it? Leicester need to beat Brentford, and Ipswich need to get something against Spurs. And then if Wolves lose to Bournemouth, that, you know. I think it's going to be interesting. I still will go Wolves stay up, though.
I had Wolves to go down. That was under Gary O'Neill. But then, you know, Cunha and like these players that they've got, you know, I think it was highlighted on Match of the Day, they could be up in the top six, top eight teams. Mm-hmm. And that there's such quality there. You know, even like a Liam Delap, who's having a great season this year, took his goal brilliantly, works really hard for the team. There's just so much quality in and around this Premier League that I do think the relegation battle will go to the wire.
I was going to talk about some. Oh yeah, Villa. That's lots of players brought in. Rashford did quite well when he came on. Asensio's
really
there.
Good. Brilliant. Rashford's look.
But reality is they're not actually anywhere near the top five, are they? When you look at the table, they're ninth place, 38 points. They're five off fifth. But you've also got five other clubs ahead of you. I mean, Liverpool and Chelsea to come.
Well, and also the round of 16, isn't it? Obviously, it's great that they qualified in that top eight, but then they're going to have a big game coming up in, is it February or start of March that these ones start happening? Yeah. And if they weren't in Europe, which you want to be in Europe, but if they weren't in Europe, you'd be going into a run now where they'd go, we've got a bit of a clean slate going forward for the rest of the season. Like we can start to look forward to these, a more clear schedule, but
with all due respect to Ipswich, though, they needed to win that game because they've got Liverpool at home, Chelsea at home, Palace away, and then Brentford away. They're not really...
Well, I could see them beating Liverpool in the week.
I think the problem with this league is, though, and the positive with this league is the competitive nature, and people look at it and go, oh, we're only 5 points off top five, but it's not a league where you're going to go and win three or four in a row unless you're Liverpool or Arsenal. So 5 points... it's fine when you've got half a league that is shit. But in a league where everybody's pretty competitive, 5 point gaps are more like 8 point gaps.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. And yeah, for me, that's great. But yeah, if you're a Villa fan trying to pine for Europe and Champions League football with Champions League talent that you've just bought in, that is the worry, isn't it?
What I'm saying is I think Villa have blown Champions League football by not beating Ipswich. I think that one result.
Who would be your top five now?
It's a good question, Will, and it's one I've not really thought about. I would put you on the spot. As the Champions League, you know when you hit table on BBC and then it goes to the Champions League for some reason? I don't know why that keeps happening. I'd say Barcelona.
Okay, si, senor.
Premier League title. Look, I don't know. Liverpool will win it. Arsenal should be second. I think Man City will end up third now.
I think City will end up second.
Well, they could do.
No, I'm telling you, I think City will be second.
What, they're going to make up a 9 point gap on Arsenal?
Yeah.
You're wrong. Third, Man City. And then I think it gets really interesting because I think top five get Champions League football. So if it's Arsenal, Liverpool and Man City for three spots, there are two up for grabs. Can Forest claw onto it? Could Bournemouth get it? Will Chelsea bounce back? Will Newcastle find some form? I think it could be the most exciting sort of top five, four race we've had for years, because if it ends up being Liverpool, Arsenal, Man City, Chelsea, Newcastle, it's sort of like, oh, I've seen that before. But if you did get a Bournemouth or a Fulham or a Brighton or a Forest in there, so I'm going to go. I'm not going to sit on the fence. I'm going to go Liverpool, Arsenal, Man City, Chelsea, Bournemouth. Oh,
Bournemouth in Champions League football.
I know, with 11,000 fans.
Well, apparently, I only caught a clip of this on TikTok, so I've been clipped up before by saying, where did you get your sources from? But apparently they might not be able to play Champions League football at their ground. They'd have to go to Southampton to do it.
Probably not a bad idea, though, because then again, who's going to turn up?
And that's the problem we have. You've got to respect Bournemouth. Not the fans. Not having a go at the fans. You've got to respect the journey. Villa could still get in for me, just the level of, you know, is it Malin that didn't even get registered for the Champions League squad? So just to have him fresh, raring to go for every Premier League weekend and have that quality. Like, yeah, Rashford, Asensio and Malin. I know West Ham won the August transfer window and that got them absolutely nish. Mm. They just got their manager sacked. So
they can't score goals though, Villa. Did you know that?
Well, I feel Duran is a more natural finisher than Ollie Watkins is. I think Ollie Watkins is a better all-round performer. I think that could...
This is incredible, right? They've scored in the Premier League 35 goals, which doesn't put... Although they're ninth, they wouldn't be in the top... Bloody hell. So Brighton have got more than them. Brentford have got more than them. Spurs have got more than them. So they're down in 13th place for goals scored. Oh, Wolves have scored the same amount as them. So they're joint 13th for goals scored.
They're getting a lot of injuries on that back line as well, aren't they? They keep having to rotate and shuffle with that. So it just feels a bit unsettled in probably one of their most challenging seasons to date.
Well, it's probably predictable, isn't it? That to juggle the Champions League and the Premier League when you're not used to it, it's stunk a lot of teams.
Yeah, exactly. You need that experience, don't you? But that's why Manchester City can win a treble, because it's 10 years in the making of knowing how to play those games.
I think the Rashford thing's quite interesting for Villa, though, because I watched the game for like the last half an hour, like I said, and it reminded me of United. Like, the good thing about Rashford when he plays well is you'll win games, but when he's not playing well, like everything was going through Rashford, and I'm like, you've got Morgan Rogers, you've got Ollie Watkins, obviously Jacob Ramsey had gone off. If their plan is get the ball to Rashford, you're going to become very Rashford-centric, and that can be problematic as a Man United fan.
I think he's looked great since he's... it's been perfect for him because he's been coming on, hasn't he? So you can impact the game a little bit better, especially with the nature of how he performs.
Well, I'm certainly looking forward to Liverpool-Villa. I think that's going to be... I mean, imagine if...
What are you going to watch?
I think Liverpool-Villa kicks off at 7:30, doesn't it? So I'll get half an hour of that. But I'll have them both on at the same time. It's a great night, Wednesday
I'll have
night.
Them both.
I'll have both, yeah.
I'll be... Bellingham will be able to play, didn't he? Did you see his red card at the weekend?
Yeah, he'll be fine.
Didn't agree with that. Disgusting behaviour.
I don't see a way back for
Man City. From the referee. You what, sorry?
I don't see a way back for Man City.
No, the Gonzalez one could... Look, they're all saying now they've got that stable bed for those attacking players to go forward and attack. But yeah, Real Madrid in the Champions League with a lead in the Bernabeu. This is very systematic, isn't it? I think they'll win. I do think Villa could beat Liverpool on Wednesday.
If Villa did beat Liverpool on Wednesday, it sets up that Man City game at the Etihad on Sunday very nicely.
Throw a puss in with the pigeons, that would. So I think that would make the title race very interesting. Big game for Blues this week. I'll be down there Tuesday night. Sold out St Andrews Virtue Trophy. Semi-final, one game away from Wembley.
Playing against the mighty...
Bradford City, who were on an amazing run themselves as well.
Yeah, I mean, we've not really been keeping up to date with what's been going on, have we? You beat Charlton at the weekend.
We beat your beloved Charlton at the weekend. Beloved Coventry City are on an amazing run with Frank Lampard. They got a last-minute winner against Sheffield Wednesday. Ellis Sims capitalising on a defensive mistake. I think Sunderland won on the Friday. Enzo Lafee scored, or was that in the week? So there's a lot going on in the EFL, Mark, so you know, just keep up to date with it, because
I'm just having a look now. I know Salford lost, which is always a, you know, sad thing. Notts County drew with Bradford 0-0.
How are the Moors getting on? I saw they slipped down to like 10th.
Yeah, they got beat by Barnet 3-1. I feel like I've just given up on Moors and Coventry for different reasons.
Well, yeah, I mean, Coventry should be quite an interesting one going forward.
Just having a look at League One, Notts County, you still have my support. And
that's
you
League
are,
Two.
Yeah, League One, Birmingham top 69. Everyone likes that. 9 points just, clear from Wickham.
I just hope we, I'm so like, I just want it done, but like that's such an arrogant point of view.
I told you, you at the start of the season, enjoy it. Notts County are fourth.
I'm enjoying it.
1 point behind Bradford.
I'm just enjoying going as well. We got Reading away at the weekend, which is not too far from me, so I might try and see if there's any tickets left for that.
That's but Madden League One, left. Isn't it? I think that's the only league where you get four relegated.
Well, they're trying to change it. So because they're trying to change it so that the National League teams come up. And it's a very nuanced point, but I saw Gareth Ainsworth, who's now Shrewsbury Town manager, arguing against it. So, but I feel from an outside perspective, those National League teams are all professional. So it's not like before, is it? Like when we were growing up, it's like you're getting some semi-pro team coming into the league who are just making a fist of it. Like everyone, even down to the divide of North and South, there's some professional teams in there, if not quite a few. So,
who does what league is Shrewsbury in then?
They're League One.
So why is he arguing against it? It's nothing to do with him.
Well, he'd be affected by it as a Shrewsbury Town manager if that went down to three relegated.
They're third from bottom and four go down. I think, look, three go down in the Prem, three go down in the Championship, four go down in League One, and then two go down in League Two. Should just be three across the board.
And I agree because the National League...
Four down's a lot. I don't think four should go down. It looks stupid.
And look at the top of League One, right? Wrexham come from the National League in the last couple of years. Stockport County have come from the National League in the last couple of years. Mm. There's a few other teams in and around that as well. You know, yeah, I completely agree. So it's a more healthier pyramid for me going forward.
I wonder what
Go on.
I wonder what happened to Bromley because we saw them get promoted.
I think they're doing okay.
11th, yeah.
Yeah, look. Harrogate Town still in there. How are they doing?
20th.
Yeah, well, you know, it's not 24th. So
Carlisle are heading down.
Under Mark Hughes.
Morecambe.
Well, Morecambe are in financial ruin because of owners that are bastards.
Third from bottom, Tranmere. They should be going down.
Football is all about moments. And sometimes you're in bad moments.
Three up, three down. That's what it should be across the league. Four down. I never realised it was four down in League One. That's just stupid. Yeah. That's Goldbridge Saves Football. Stop the four down in League One.
That's why it's a Blues fan.
Blackout. Keep that.
That's why it's a Blues fan. I'm just happy to stay up this year. You know, four down in League One. We're just, you know, we fought off relegation, hopefully.
If it was four down in the Prem, I think I'd start to worry.
That would actually be class. Just bring it in last minute. Four down from now.
We'd still be all right. Okay, everyone. Well, thank you. As I say, give us a follow. Get your comments in. Enjoyed that show. I'm sure you'll see the James Maddison clip later. I think that's one for Niall, but there'll be a few more as well. And remember, I think next week we're going to try and get it out early Monday. Straight after this, we'll sort of try and record it after the Liverpool.
I'm free Sunday, yeah. I could have recorded Sunday, but I was in Devon and the Wi-Fi was about as temporary as Madison's form.
Yeah. Good one. Keep that
thanks.
In as well.
Thanks.
Thanks everybody for watching. We're back next week. Thanks for all your support. As I say, give us a follow, get your comments in, and thank you to Will and Niall as well.
Cheers, Mark.
Bye-bye.